Hello, everyone around the world. Welcome. Bienvenidos, que calo sirvete, to Coloring My Way Across the Globe. I'm your host, Lauren Battistini, color consultant, artist, language learner, and world traveler. Join me each week as I chronicle the most colorful people, places, and experiences I encounter off the beaten path, both near and far. So, let's go. Vámonos, que pame. Greetings, greetings. Welcome back to the podcast, Coloring My Way Across the Globe. I'm your host, Lauren Battistini. Thank you for joining me today. I have a most distinguished guest before me. This gentleman is Rob Dyer. He is the owner and founder of an award-winning travel and lifestyle resource called The Real Japan. Self-described as a virtual Japan travel guide, Rob himself has been exploring Japan since the year 2000. And his tagline on his travel website is, "Let's make life easier for you." So of course, Rob was the first person I thought of when I sat down to talk about all things Japan. Rob, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here. I kind of started blogging years ago. Actually, I started a music review blog back in 1999. I was used to writing online, but that was always just a hobby. But then in 2015, I started dabbling with blogging about travel in Japan. And that was using blogger.com. I don't know if people remember that, but I was using that at the time. That also started out as a hobby, actually. But a couple of years later, when I got to the grand old age of 50, I decided that it was time to sort of spend some more time on focusing on what I really wanted out of life. I always had in my mind that I kind of, quote unquote, retire at 50. And that's what I was always working towards. And so that's what I ended up doing. And I figured the thing that I really wanted to spend time pursuing was my passion for travel, and in particular travel in Japan, because my wife's Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to turn my attention to that, but also kind of look at the possibility of making a living out of that in the process. So it became my full-time gig a couple of years later.
Well, that's impressive. I have to tell you that I first discovered you, as you know, when my son Christian and I were planning a trip to Japan, which we went last May. And I was doing a Google search for Japanese travel experts. And of course, your website popped up. And, you know, you run an award-winning travel and lifestyle resource. This is not just some small thing. You have indeed turned this into not just a passion project, but a vocation and a career. And you help thousands and thousands of people. And the reason I contacted you in the first place is when I saw part of your tagline says, "Exploring Japan since 2000. And then you said, "Let's make life easier for you." And I thought, oh my word, this sounds perfect for me, because I knew nothing about Japan, the Japanese culture. My college age son, I promised him a trip. I was going to take a trip with each of my three children. Christian is my oldest, and he had always wanted to go to Japan. So of course, this is how I found you. Mm-hmm. And I do have to ask, prior to launching The Real Japan, what did you do professionally, if you don't mind my asking?
No, sure. Yeah, no. The bulk of my career, sort of working professional career, has been in roles in sales and marketing in the private sector mostly. And it was strange how it all started. I had no kind of game plan. I wasn't very academic at school. I was always kind of into creative things. And my parents decided to retire early and move to Norfolk in the coast in England. So it's kind of out the way. So I wanted to stay put. And so I thought, okay, I need to get a job in London. So I literally just registered with a bunch of agencies in London. And quite bizarrely, one of the jobs I was offered there wasn't working in sales and marketing. It was working in kind of stock control, literally underground, actually. But it was at Garrard, which was used to be the Crown Jewelers.
I'm not understanding. I hate to interrupt you, but what did you just say about stock control?
So I was offered a job in stock control. So in a store, keeping track of the stock in the store.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And so that was in a store. The store happened to be Garrard, which was the Crown Jewelers.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was really a really strange experience. But it was really kind of out of my comfort zone. And the strangest thing was I had an interview with a woman there, and I was having a bunch of interviews at the time because I was just job hunting. And this woman and I we kind of got on, but we clashed as well. But we both kind of enjoyed that clash of personalities. Long story short, anyway, I was offered the job and I took it. But then I really wanted to aspire to be a salesman on the floor. So this is serving kind of the rich and the famous, as in the Crown Jewellers store.
Oh, yeah.
And I managed to work my way up. They were very skeptical because I was like a rough looking sort of 20-year-old at the time with my ears pierced and all that kind of stuff, wearing jeans. Literally, the store was underground where I was where I was working, but I wanted to get up into the floor, and I ended up becoming their youngest ever salesman in their entire 350-year history. So I met people like Princess Diana, the Sultan of Brunei, sort of kings and queens, and all this kind of stuff, and famous people. So I really enjoyed that. But then I worked in intellectual property licensing for about 14 years, and I was dealing there with authors and publishers and organizations who needed to use copyright materials. So that was lots of negotiating and contracts, and I really enjoyed that work. But my last kind of regular job in inverted commas was heading up business development for a small and medium enterprise. And what they did was they brought together C-suite executives from large corporations and their sort of supplier markets who helped them solve their major business issues. And what we did, right, the way we got them together was organizing private dinners and boutique networking events in
So smart.
five-star venues in London and Europe. Yeah, no, that was really enjoyable as well. So I
Oh.
really enjoyed my time there. I was there for about 10 years, but again, I got to that sort of age of 50 and I thought, I need to now think about what I want to do going forward. So
Well,
that's where I
this is
changed
a,
tack.
I think that from the way you've described it, you've always had some type of entrepreneurial spirit running through, coursing through your veins, in my opinion. And I admire that. I really do. In fact, most of the guests I have on my podcast definitely have the entrepreneurial spirit. And I do like to discuss that as part of the podcast. So, but you know, I'm a professional color consultant and now merging over into the world of art and podcasting. And so I really want to begin a discussion on the colors of Japan. And when I was there for the 2 weeks in May with my son, we just saw so much color. And it was fascinating to me the way that it was utilized, both on billboards as well as in some of the architectural spaces. And so I want to know from your perspective, what times of year are best for people to go and see the most color in Japan?
It's a timely question. This is a popular question, but something I wasn't addressing on my website until recently. So I've not long ago created a post called "When is the best time to visit Japan?" Of course, I guess most people would know Japan for its sakura season in the spring, the cherry blossom,
Yes.
which is pink and vibrant, thick and everywhere. But the problem with that time of year is you have to share those views with, millions literally of local and international tourists, and then
Yep.
you have to pay the inflated hotel prices and things like that. So there's pros and cons to going in these kind of peak periods. But generally, for most people, I actually recommend autumn or fall, as the country is like transformed top to bottom by the leaves changing color, which I know you get a lot of in the States. But this lasts an awful lot longer than the cherry blossom season. Cherry blossom, is literally a handful of days in each area. So it's fleeting over a couple of weeks,
Yeah.
primarily. But in the autumn, you've got a much better chance of capturing the best views. And it's more widespread because 72% of Japan is covered in mountains. And most of those mountains are covered in forests and trees. So you're never that far from nature when you're in Japan.
This
So I always suggest autumn is I think, a really good, bang for your buck season in terms of color.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
And in the summer, if people are looking to go in the summer when it's kind of hot, if you head really north where it's a bit cooler, there's sort of many sort of floral fans head to the northern island of Hokkaido because they have some really dramatic flower and lavender blossom displays around the Furano region. And then if you wanted to do the complete opposite and head to Japan's extreme south, down to the Yaeyama Islands, which are kind of way beyond even Okinawa, down there you'll see stunning clear blue seas contrasted with sort of the vivid reds and purples you get of bougainvillea, which naturally grows there.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, a lot of the art I draw is floral based right now, and so I'm particularly inspired by different flower species and then of course different colors of all flora and fauna. So this is very good to know. Good for my audience to know.
You're listening to Coloring My Way Across the Globe with Lauren Battistini. For more information, check out lfbcolor.com.
Again, talking about color, I noticed something very distinct when my son and I were there, and we were there in about five different places you recommended, Rob. But when we were there in May, what I noticed about the women in particular, the way that they dress and the colors that they use, they stick to a very neutral color palette. They dress impeccably well, very beautifully, very femininely, but their color palette is very neutral. And you contrast that to all of the vibrant colors that I saw in almost every city we visited. What is your opinion on that? I just noticed that the women dress with a more neutral color palette.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I think it's around kind of the Japanese society and how Japanese society operates. So the Japanese have like a maxim which kind of translates as the nail that stands out must be hammered down, which sounds awful, but it's quite true of kind of Japan. And I think this applies across much of daily life in Japan, actually. So I think this is kind of indicative of a general desire to conform and not to upset the kind of equilibrium in Japan. So I always think life in Japan is like living in a series of concentric circles. So first of all, you've got like the family unit, then there's being a good neighbor, and then being part of the local community, the town or the region. Japan has actually has a strong, very strong sense of regional identity driven by its people. So, and then when you look at something like in the workplace, everything is team orientated. So factory workers famously start their day with these exercise and singing routines, which are all designed to emphasize the kind of, group collective. And I think going back to basics, I think this helps the Japanese cope with their natural disasters, such as the recent earthquake in Ishikawa, because everyone automatically and instinctively pulls together for the greater good. And I think that's very kind of typical of Japanese society, actually. And I've also written, I'm more interested in what you said about Japanese architecture, because I've written, I'm a big architecture fan. I've written a few times about architecture in Japan, and I think there are some cultural similarities there as well. Because to outsiders, I think the Japanese as a race and society are viewed as a kind of homogenous conforming mass, and that, and that's partly obviously because of the way they're portrayed in the media. But architecture in Japan, as you will have seen, is kind of wildly varied and bold and often ugly to some eyes. But that also seems at odds with the kind of the individual has to conform. So when it's people, I think there's conformity. When it's in like the commercial world, it's almost like there's a free for all.
And
Funnily enough, sorry, go on.
that's what I wondered. Go ahead, please. I did not mean to interrupt.
No, it's just one other thing that occurred to me was and I'll have to introduce you actually, but a friend of mine who's a brand consultant went to Japan last year, and he made some similar observations actually when he came back, and he was sharing with me some photos of his trip, and they were nearly almost exclusively of Japan's advertising and architecture rather than the
Yes.
kind of traditional sightseeing stops that most snapshots that most people kind of share. Because he again, as a brand consultant, he was fascinated with what
Yes,
you were saying about this distinction between the people and
exactly.
the environment in which they live in.
Well, Rob, I do want to meet your friend, by the way, because a lot of what I do as a color consultant, and I made some of the same observations that he did. I was looking at packaging on products, I was looking at logos, I was just looking at storefronts, and again, the architecture, and I saw so much color. But as a foreigner, just looking in, being there only for 2 weeks, the way I interpreted it, again, with my limited knowledge, I figured that the reason that they dress with more neutral color palettes and a little bit more conservatively had to do with respect, conservatism, and just a quiet strength. That is sort of how I interpreted it, again, with my limited knowledge, as a tourist. I thought I was quite fascinated because the women especially are just stunningly beautiful. And it's this understated type of beauty. And I came to really appreciate it because as a color consultant, I wear color all the time. I'm pretty bold and bright. So it was refreshing for me to see something a little bit different that was equally as beautiful as a lot of the colorful fashion I see in other parts of the world. Speaking of culture, if you could just name one or two things that non-Japanese visitors to the country should really understand and respect when visiting Japan. This is a really important thing for me. Respect is important to me when I travel to different countries. So, how would you advise one or two things that you would advise a tourist?
Yeah, definitely. You're right to pick up on it because of, when we travel the world, some countries have very strong cultures and traditions. They might be kind of driven by religion, but in Japan, it's not so much by religion. It's just about that kind of culture. And actually, I think this does go back to that maxim about the nail that stands out must be hammered down. So when I travel in Japan, and this is true wherever I go, but most particularly in Japan, I always try to blend in and be noticed as little as possible. And this is what I think most Japanese people will do when they go about their daily lives.
Yes.
So, for example, you won't generally hear people talking on the telephone when they're on public transport. You won't see people walking down the street and eating like you would in the West. Most Japanese would know a few kind of English words, but won't speak much English. So I always recommend learning a few survival phrases at the very least. Take a
Yes.
dictionary if you're a bit old school like me, or use a, something app like Google Translate to at least make a modest effort. And what little effort you make will be much appreciated, no matter how awkward your pronunciation might be.
Well,
And if you speak little or no Japanese, then you might actually be surprised at how accommodating random strangers will be in trying to help you. I've, heard lots of stories of this and experienced this myself. You might have, when you were there, of people
oh, yes.
literally going out of their way to show and help people, not just
I've
to point them in the right direction.
I found that to be the case, Rob. I've got to laugh. I'm laughing to myself. My son and I had we had this whole pep talk with each other in this sort of preparatory, a little just cultural tutorial, so to speak, before we left for Japan. I heeded your advice. We tried so hard to blend in, Rob. We really did. You need to remember that we're two loud Southern U.S. And we're not obnoxious U.S. tourists, but we are loud. So I said to my son, I said, Christian, we're going to need to tone it down. We're going to just speak quietly. But my son and I, for as much as we love each other, we're very close. We have a very great relationship. We have a wonderful relationship, but we fight a lot. And so there would be times when we were arguing about navigation and which train to take, and it got a little loud and heated. And I am sure that we did not blend in at all. And couple that with the fact that my son and I both were of Spaniard and Italian type of heritage. We've got this very big, fluffy, curly hair. And I'm telling you, my son noticed this more than I did. There were Japanese people who were looking at us, and I think we scared some children. They had not seen our hair before, apparently. And we tried so hard, Rob, to blend in. We feel that we were good tourists, but we were not always quiet and reserved. And our hair just really made us stand out, and we scared some children.
You are listening to Coloring My Way Across the Globe. Stories of the most colorful people, places, and experiences off the beaten path, both near and far, as hosted by myself, Lauren Battistini. Each week, I'll be interviewing color professionals, artists, world travelers, language learning experts, digital nomads, other entrepreneurs, creative professionals, visionaries. There's something here for everyone interested in the world around them. Keep listening, there's more to follow.
You wouldn't be the first to do it, I'm sure, Lauren. But if anyone wants any more tips on this, I do have a post called Top 7 Etiquette Tips or something like that. So if people want to visit my site and learn more about that aspect of traveling in Japan, they're welcome to check it out.
And Rob, what I will do is after this interview, I will gather up those links to the posts, the aforementioned posts. And those will be
Sure.
included within the link of the podcast episode. And also, I'll be doing a blog post dedicated to this episode. So that information will be contained therein. So I do have a question for you. A lot of my listeners are going to want to know about, we all love a good love story. So you mentioned in the beginning of the interview that your wife is Japanese. I've got to know, inquiring minds need to know how you met, and just tell us a bit of your love story, if you don't mind.
Actually, I do have this is quite funny, actually. I do have a good romantic story to tell, actually.
We all need to hear one. I tell you what, going into 2024, we all need a good love story.
Okay, so well, back in the I think it was the 1990s, my wife and I were and still are actually fans of the English band called Depeche Mode,
Oh, I love
electronic band.
them.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Most people never have heard of them, so I have to kind of scope that out. But yeah, so we've always been fans of theirs. So, and back in the day, we were both members of the Depeche Mode fan club, and this is like an international
What?
thing. And so this, and they used to. So this is kind of pre-internet and social media. So they used to publish a club magazine, and in that magazine, it included a pen pal section. So I was always interested in Japan. So I just found anyone who was living in Japan who was in the pen pal section and started writing to them. And there was about, literally, I was writing to about six pen pals at the same time. And they sort of gradually stopped writing, and only one of them continued. And that was my then, well, it became my sort of future wife. But she used to, her style of living at the time was she used to work hard, save, and then go traveling for a long time. So she spent time traveling in America and different countries, Europe and so on. So whenever she came to the UK, we used to hook up as kind of fellow Depeche Mode fans. And we literally went to see Depeche Mode in London one time when she was here in the UK. So that's how we got together. And then, so we got married in the UK, and then we got married on the exact same date 1 year later in Japan. And that was called Ikuta Shrine in Kobe, which is one of Japan's three oldest Shinto shrines. And of course, that was in a traditional Shinto ceremony.
Wow.
So, and my mum and sister came over for the wedding, which was great. So, you have where in some kind of ceremonies where you have the bride's family sit on one side and the groom's family sit on the other. Literally on my side of the room, there was just my mum and my sister. And then there was my wife's family all on the other side taking up the aisles. And the way that the Shinto ceremony works is that only the groom speaks the vows, and the bride simply agrees to them. But those vows are kind of in ancient Japanese. I don't know what the correct term is, but it is like old Japanese, and it's nothing like the modern language. So I had to learn it by heart, phonetically. And I remember showing my wife the kanji. So you go to the shrine, and they obviously brief you in advance and walk you through the process. And they give you this scroll with these old kanji, the characters, the old Japanese characters. And I showed it to my wife and her family, and they couldn't read most of it. It was so kind of ancient Japanese. So I had to learn all that phonetically, and I messed up on just one bit. But yeah, so that was a pretty unforgettable kind of immersive cultural experience. And
Boy.
whenever I'm in Kobe, I always go back to revisit that shrine, often around New Year time.
This is a beautiful love story, and it's a very interesting and then it, listen, it's a very interesting and inspiring one, and I love that the two of you already had these common interests, and it just made it a natural extension. It facilitated something deeper for the two of you, and I think that's a beautiful love story. And thank you for sharing that. And I have to tell you about your wedding ceremony. First of all, kudos to you. That's extremely impressive that you would phonetically memorize an ancient Japanese wedding vows. That's very impressive, and I'm sure it was hard to do. And I'm sure that won you some brownie points with your wife's family. It had to have, right? And my son and I, when we were traveling, it was, I don't know, I cannot remember if it was in Kyoto or if it was in, perhaps it was Kanazawa. But we happened upon a wedding ceremony at one of the shrines. And we just sat there very, very, very quietly, of course, from the outside. And we just listened for a couple of minutes. And we were reverent about it. One of the things I told my son when we visited, this is what I told him, and I think that you would agree with this. I believe that whenever you're traveling to any foreign country and you're visiting any religious house, shrine, church, that even if you do not ha share that same set of religious beliefs, it is of utmost importance to observe whatever the protocol is and to give them their due respect. So we
Absolutely.
were very careful to stand at a very far distance. We did not take pictures. We just walked past very quietly. We gave a moment of silence and reverence, but it was a beautiful experience. And we were there with a bird's eye view, but there nonetheless. It was lovely.
Yeah,
Lovely.
no, you do see that quite often, actually. It's surprising how often you do see wedding ceremonies take place. But because a lot of Japanese, when Japanese kind of invoke or evoke religion when they want it at times in their lives, so generally they're not that kind of religious. But at kind of major points in their life, particularly with births, deaths, and marriage, then they'll kind of use religion to sort of make the most of that and make it a special memory. So you do see that an awful lot. So it's not uncommon to actually literally be walking down the road and see a ceremony, kind of, a group of people coming out of a church, or because they do have church weddings there as well,
Yes.
or out of a Shinto shrine.
Most definitely. Well, when you and I began working together, I contacted you and explained to you what my goals and objectives were for the trip that Christian and I were to take. I'm shifting gears a little bit here to talk about the products and services you offer. For me, what was quite helpful was I was able to email you and explain to you the types of travelers that my son and I are. And actually, he and I are two different kinds of travelers. And we really found that out on the trip. But the service that you provided me was we had a conference call first. You asked me several questions. You gave me some ideas, and I told you I needed a 2-week itinerary. And I was starting from scratch, not knowing anything about Japan at all. And so you created a travel itinerary plan for me, and you offered suggestions. And I believe we had a follow-up call after that where I had a few other questions. But tell our audience, please, the types of products and services that you offer, because you offer everything from ebooks, language learning tools, you offer now Google Guides, I think, and as well as this consulting. So I'd like to spend a few minutes with you telling us the products and services that you offer and how people can work with you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's kind of you've hit it really well actually, because I mainly have products and then the services. So the products are kind of resources, really, travel resources for helping people plan their trips and for when they're out there. And so I've got a few ebooks which focus, and my most popular blog post, for example, is How to Travel in Japan When You Don't Speak the Language, basically.
Love it.
And it was so popular that I just created an ebook around it as well. So that's of my most popular ebook, and that's gone through a couple of editions. And I then produced, I think it was at the start of last year, an audiobook version of that as well. There's also another book which is about focuses on all the different aspects of planning, so the kind of pre-travel stuff.
You're listening to Coloring My Way Across the Globe with Lauren Battistini. For more information, check out lfbcolor.com.
Because that's what most people want my site for. I mean, it's an interesting site insofar as it's people, a lot of people come and read the blog, and there's a huge blog on there. There's lots and lots of information on there for free that people can use for their trip planning and so on. But the main thing about all those blog posts is I want them to have function and utility. So there's always at the bottom of all my blog posts, there's a resources section that will be to things that, resources online, products and services that other people offer, or books that you can buy on Amazon, anything that's related to the content of that post that's kind of help people get forward. But if people want to buy some books from me on, really sort of drill into a subject area in more detail, they're welcome to do that. I do hope to publish more books this year, and I've got outlines for three more, including a complete rewrite and expanded version of my How to Travel in Japan one without speaking Japanese, because that's my most popular one. My travel planning services include, my most popular one is my kind of Ask Me Anything travel planning calls. So those are ideal for anyone who's struggling with the overwhelm of all the trip planning, which is,
And that was one of that was
it's a
my
big one. I
situation.
mean, there's just so many things in Japan, especially when it's a first time trip. It's virtually impossible to sort of single it down into like a coherent but also comfortable trip. I really spend a lot of time helping people narrow down like l big lists into something that's more practical. And as you kind of experience, we jump on a half hour Zoom call. You'll be sent a questionnaire in advance, so I get to understand what your travel preference is and style is, that kind of thing, so we can make the most out of the call. People will get a copy of the recording. I do a video call so people can focus on the call itself, on just having the conversation. They didn't worry, have to worry about taking notes. I'll follow that up by emailing them with travel planning notes with specific individual feedback, advice, and recommendations. And that will include links to online resources and experiences that people can reserve for themselves. And so they're really a kind of a quick way to fast track any aspect of Japan trip planning. I did also offer a full travel planning service, which was like the full works, but that's on hold at the moment because it's so time consuming for me. So I'm looking at developing other products or services to meet those needs. And as you touched on, I recently launched a new series of Google Maps city guides. So these are detailed city guides that include pretty much everything you would need to plan a stay in a city. And the first one is a Hiroshima city guide. And I kind of refer to it as Hiroshima in your hand because they're designed to save you not only time and money, but they include pretty much everything you'd need to pre-plan the trip, book your accommodation, book even restaurants through an English platform, things like that. So, and all of these maps I'm going to be releasing will include unlimited free lifetime updates. So you'll always have the latest version available.
Wow.
And so all the content in the map, so it's a Google map, but it's kind of interactive. So it's all grouped into categories. So there's tabs you can click on to look at accommodation, restaurants, transportation, all these kind of things, the most popular attractions. And obviously, in the case of Hiroshima, there's 10 historic atomic bomb sites. You could book food experiences. So if you want to do a sushi making class or something like that, or craft classes, something like that, those are all possible to book through the app. And I also include my 1, 2, and 3 day itineraries. So if people want detailed plans for each day and want to use that as their guide, they can do that. And it also comes with a 14-page PDF Hiroshima city guide, which is written by a local resident and tour guide called Joy Walsh. And each map comes with an accompanying walkthrough video showing you how to use it. So
My
it's
goodness,
kind of
wow.
like handing it over to people for people who kind of, don't want to do all the groundwork because there's a lot of hours goes into this,
Yes.
but it kind of speeds up the process for them.
Well, I have got to tell you that from, entrepreneur to entrepreneur, I find you to be very brilliant in your approach, and you provide solutions to people's dilemmas when they're wanting to plan their trips to Japan. But you don't just do so in this generic way. You specifically answer questions and you create these ebooks and these travel guides and so many products and services. And I think that it just runs the gamut. There's something for everybody, and you're quite generous with the amount of free knowledge that you give out on your website between the podcast, excuse me, not podcast, the blog posts that you have, as well as a lot. You just have so much free information, a plethora of it actually. And so it's quite generous of you to do this for your audience. And again, people can work with you as specifically as they need to, or as generically as they need to. So,
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point, Lauren, because I want to serve as many people's needs as I can, but my passion lies in kind of the sorts of things that you're interested in as well. I know from where you travel elsewhere, which is kind of getting off the beaten path, that kind of thing. So,
definitely.
yeah,
And
I'm always kind of helping people, do that little bit of initial hand holding just to give them a little bit of encouragement, particularly if it's a place they've not visited before.
yeah, well, speaking of off the beaten path, one of the things I want to do, my mission with Coloring My Way Across the Globe, as well as a lot of my artwork, is to chronicle the most colorful people, places, and experiences I encounter off the beaten path. And you are certainly one of those people whom I've encountered in this journey. And I want to close with a question for you. It's what I ask all my guests, and I think you'll have a great answer. And that is, what does it mean to you to live a colorful life?
That's a good question. That's quite a tricky one, I guess. But I think, well, my wife and I both, and this was independently before we hooked up, but we both love to travel. We always have done. And for me, traveling, because the thing about traveling is it engages all the senses, which is what makes it so enriching. And I think traveling is colorful living because after Japan, Greece is my favorite country. And we visit it as often as we can. And I noticed on I was looking at your website actually, and I noticed that my first trip to Japan, to Greece, sorry, I was about 19 or so at the time with my girlfriend. And my first trip was to the small island of Poros, which I saw on your website that you also visited. And if people don't know, it's really tiny.
Oh my goodness. Actually, where have I visited? Oh my gosh, yes, that's right, because I was just there in Greece for 5 weeks, and that was one of the islands I visited, and I'm learning Greek as my third language. So I do agree with
Terrific.
you that thank you. I do agree with you that living colorfully, that travel has a lot to do with that, and it opens your eyes to new cultures, people, customs,
It,
languages,
yeah,
experiences.
absolutely. I mean, so kind of being able to visit different countries and striving, because you kind of sometimes have to force yourself to have new experiences when traveling. To me, that just kind of builds up like a rich library of memories, which are going to be unique to me and my travels. And obviously, the things that I love about traveling. And that's always going to be kind of unique to me and to any individual. So, this is why I love sharing those experiences or that passion with others. So, helping other people have kind of better lives, if you like, through travel. There's just no greater reward than hearing stories like yours of people I've helped, you know, experience kind of deeper, richer travel in Japan. And so this is the focus for what I do professionally, but also what I love to do personally as well.
Well, you have been a blessing to my family, Rob. I've got to tell you as we close here that my son Christian and I had a magical, colorful experience in Japan because of the itinerary and the suggestions that you provided for us. And it's an experience that even to this day, many months later, my son and I still laugh about and get a little bit teary-eyed sometimes because it was such a meaningful experience for the both of us.
That's
And
wonderful.
so thank you for that. And as we draw to a close, I'd like you to just let my listeners know how they can get in touch with you. Tell us your website and how we can best reach you.
Sure, the best place to always start for me is at my website, which is therealjapan.com. I'm on a number of social media, but that's where all my content is, and there's so much stuff on there. There's sections on resources that people can use, online sites that I would recommend. You know, if you want to book things independently, I've got my blog. There's my store as well on there. So if people want to go to the store and have a look through my books and services, that kind of stuff, it's all on there. That's the place to start. And if they want to find me on social, just look for The Real Japan.
Well, thank you for your time, Rob. I've got to say that just as in 2 weeks in Japan, I don't feel that I got to scratch the surface of all there is to it. Even in this interview, I don't feel that we've scratched the surface of your knowledge base of all things Japan. So I have a feeling we need to do a follow-up podcast at some point. And you are always welcome back as my guest because you do know so much and you've been lovely. So
I'd
thank
love to do that, Lauren.
you. Well, and thank you for giving so graciously of your time. And my audience out there, I encourage you to continue living colorfully. And I will talk to you all next week. And thank you for tuning in to Coloring My Way Across the Globe.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Coloring My Way Across the Globe. I hope that you've enjoyed the conversation, and we would love to stay connected with you throughout the week. The best way to connect is by subscribing to our newsletter at www.lfbcolor.com. That's www.l as in Lauren, f as in Frank, b as in boy, color, colr.com. Also, you may find us on Instagram using the same handle, lfbcolor, for the latest stories, podcast guest profiles, travel photography, language learning diaries, and my own colorful art. Hope to see you there, friends. Thank you again.